Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air. 3w.realworldradio.fm.
On December 1st, the same day as the UN climate talks in Lima, in Peru began, Friends of the Earth Europe released the report Fracking Frenzy: How the Fracking Industry is Threatening the Planet. This report highlights the expansion of the shale gas industry with examples of 11 key countries in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, and it finds that multinational oil and gas companies such as Total, Shell, and Chevron are moving into increasingly vulnerable countries where the ecosystems, communities, and authorities are even less unable to cope with the impacts of extraction. And with me here I have Antoine Simon, shale gas campaigner from Friends of the Earth Europe. And I was wondering, Antoine, if you could explain to me the process of shale gas fracking and what the problems and consequences are. In what way does it affect the environment?
This process, which is often called fracking, high-volume horizontal hydraulic fracturing, is an accumulation of recently developed technologies which have allowed to extract these extreme energies which were known by the industry for decades, but which was not technically and economically extractable until quite recently, and which basically consists in going sometimes down to 5 to 6 kilometers below in order to access this gas, which is poorly densely situated in these shale layers. And so you inject a mixture of millions of liters of water mixed with sands and with toxic chemicals in order to crack the rock below the surface to then facilitate the recovery of that gas. This technology has been used over the quite extensively at the large scale level by the industry in the US, and the environmental records is actually extremely disappointing, not to say particularly concerning, with significant cases of water, of ground and surface water contaminations, with severe air pollution, and as a consequence, important impacts on the health of local populations, which has been really well documented by peer-reviewed scientific reports and studies. On the energy sector, this development has had some significant impact, with some much lower gas price in the country, which has attracted a lot of attention by many other countries in the world. This is notably also why we have started to work on cases in outside of Europe, and notably why we released that new report, because we realized that this industry is also expanding worldwide on almost all continents, with some potentially dramatic impacts on both on the environment, on health, and also more globally on climate.
And in the report by Friends of the Earth Europe, the report writes that the global development of unconventional fossil fuels such as shale gas has provoked much debate involving scientists, industry, political decision makers, and environmental groups and civil society. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about this debate. What have the controversies been?
Well, it is controversial because it puts on the balance, on one hand, the potential economic benefit it could have, both in terms of lower energy price and higher energy security, and on the other hand, possible and very likely environmental impacts it could have, and indirectly the important impact on health and on climate it could also generate. So this is why it has raised a lot of controversy, because it's once again the question of whether or not decision makers should develop a new industry to the detriment of the environment, and this is why it has raised a lot of controversy. Also, because the industry is quite blindly developing these activities without really caring too much about the environment, and without having done a proper assessment of the long-term impact of this of their activities, by notably not disclosing a number of information we should need to make this proper assessment of the possible impacts, notably the type of chemicals that they use and the quantity of the chemicals they use for each fracking operation, and this is a work that the scientific community has started to do, notably in the US, to try to assess the numerous and the variety of impacts that this industry can generate, and almost monthly we have between 2 to 5 new peer reviewed science concluding the same thing, that this industry is extremely harmful and can have some extremely destructive negative impacts both on the environment and afterwards on people's health. So this is why it creates a lot of controversy, because despite these acknowledgement of the impacts, some decision makers still want to improve their energy security, believing that the industry can improve the technology to make fracking more safely, which doesn't really happen at the moment.
And what would you say to those that state that shale gas would work as a complement to renewables in order to cut coal?
Well, I would really buy that story if it was indeed the case. And interestingly, this is also something that has been quite well documented, is that so far in the US, the fracking development has mostly contributed to a partly decline of the coal consumption, but not to a decline of the coal production. In the US, they have continued to produce coal to export it rather than to consume it. This is not a benefit for climate. And most of the fracking development has also contributed to a seriously decline of the renewable sector, and this is particularly concerning, and once again something that we have seen continuously in the US, but not only also in Canada, where this industry has also been developing. And the other point I would like to mention is the fact that this shale gas, and more globally the natural gas, is often promoted as a perfect transition fuel because it would be one of the cleanest fossil fuel, and this is unfortunately something that is not the case, and that we don't often talk about, because if it is true that natural gas is cleaner than most of the other fossil fuels once it is burnt, the problem is when all the quantity of natural gas, which is mostly made of methane, when most of this methane is directly leaking to the atmosphere, it has a global warming potential 86 times higher than CO2 on the 20 years timescale, which makes actually natural gas in that context one of the worst fossil fuel that we can have. And a lot of studies have been done analyzing how much methane is being leaked during the production of natural gas, and in particular during the production of shale gas in the US, and realize that on certain reservoirs, than on certain production sites, there can be up to 12% of that methane which is directly leaking in the atmosphere, and which has a dramatic impact on the planet. And even the International Energy Agency has claimed, over the past 2 to 3 years, that a world-scale development of the shale gas industry would contribute to a 3.5 degrees temperature rise. So shale gas, and more globally, natural gas, is not this transition fuel that is often promoted by the industry.
Then you look at 11 countries outside Europe and North America. Why have you chosen these countries, and are there any general tendencies you can see when it comes to these cases?
We chose these countries because they were listed as either the biggest potentials outside of the US and outside of Europe. So we wanted to look at the situation in these countries. And we also listed some of these countries because we are considering them as countries with particularly concerning ecosystems in the context of the shale gas development. Most of these countries are actually countries where you observe some extremely high cases of water scarcity. Most of these countries are also extremely earthquakes-prone countries. And we also wanted to look at these countries because in most of these countries, we have some European companies, oil and gas companies, which have started the shale gas development in these countries. And this is, of course, important for us as European citizens. We also want to look how our companies behave. Particularly, we want to make sure that they do not apply any double standards between what they would be allowed to do on our continent and what they really do on other continents. And saying that the poor environmental records in the US would certainly not be repeated in Europe, mostly because it's not them who were developing these activities in the US. They are often saying that that's only some small oil and gas companies considered as cowboys, which do not really bother about environmental standards. And that if these multinational companies had to do it, they would have certainly done it in a much cleaner way. And so we actually want now to scrutinize these same multinational companies operating outside of the US and outside of Europe, and see whether they indeed do such kind of things protecting the environment and doing fracking safely. And what's quite interesting is that in that report, we notably see that it's obviously and of course unsurprisingly not the case, that no matter how big a company, an oil and gas company is, no matter where it's coming from, no matter where they operate, no matter how they operate, you see the same pattern of environmental destruction.
Is there any one of the 11 cases that you think particularly stands out or you would like to tell us more about?
Well, the case of Argentina is interesting mostly because it's the only country which is close to a production phase. It's still really uncertain whether they will manage to produce some shale gas in all of the countries we looked at. But the case of Argentina is very interesting because we see exactly the same pattern than the one we observed in the US, where first the industry has tried and has quite successfully managed to review a number of legislation in the country to make sure that the legal framework would be as industry-friendly as possible, to guarantee a minimum gas price, to make sure that to extend the duration of the production licenses, to obtain some tax exemptions and some public aids. So it's like it happened in the United States. And what we also observe now is that we've seen some examples of European companies such as Total and Shell, which are operating inside some natural protected areas without informing the indigenous communities living in the area, the Mapuche community. Companies such as Total are actually completely ignoring the most basic environmental standards. They are providing some environmental reports before the beginning of the production to obtain some licenses. Well, except that these environmental reports, for instance, mention the presence of fauna and flora which don't even exist in the place where they are trying to drill. So, meaning that they are basically just using a template they use no matter where they operate. So that says a lot about how they really care about the environment and how also the public authorities are really putting everything in place to try to mitigate the impact. This is not happening mostly because the impacts are not well acknowledged and not well taken in consideration by public authorities, and also because the authorities do not have the capacities to monitor an industry which requires to drill not just a couple of wells. It requires to build hundreds and even thousands of wells to make that industry profitable. And this is, of course, requiring a lot of capacities that public authorities do not have.
Thank you for answering our question. That was Antoine Simon from Friends of the Earth Europe.
You are listening to Real World News.
Real World Radio meets Susan Sherbat, climate justice and energy campaigner from Friends of the Earth Europe in Lima, in Peru, where the negotiations are going on.
Then, Susie, this new report of Friends of the Earth Europe shows how fracking is developing very fast in different parts of the world, in different countries. Why did you think it was very important as Friends of the Earth Europe to show that's happening all over the world in different places?
For us as Friends of the Earth Europe, it's really important to show the impacts and the potential impacts around the world on fracking and shale gas. And I think it's the first time that we really can say clearly these are potential impacts in all the regions and not only in Europe. And those impacts are really threatening lives and livelihoods around the world. And we want to make that clear within the climate change debate and the urgency we see to really act on climate change and reduce emissions.
Exactly, Susie. As Friends of the Earth Europe, you chose that moment, the beginning of the climate change conference of the United Nations, to launch that report. What do you think that governments should do regarding the issue on fracking? What are you expecting the governments do about that?
First of all, of course, we expect that all governments, really, the developed countries, really show clear commitments or binding commitments on reducing emissions and not just put it on the developing countries and leave them alone, more or less. And then on the other side, of course, the energy debate is a really crucial debate within the debate of reducing emissions. And there we want to see really that, for example, climate finance elements climate finance is not kind of finance for dirty energy projects, including maybe shale gas, coal projects or others, but rather that money goes into solutions, into community energy, renewable solutions. And what we really clearly want here from the talks as well is that there are steps clearly steps making forward towards Paris, where we expect an international agreement signed by all countries. And in that case, for us, it's quite crucial to connect really the energy and the climate debate as much as possible.
Susie, and the European governments and the American government, are they presenting fracking and shale gas as a solution, as a way of not emitting greenhouse gas emissions?
Yes, you can see that very clearly, I think, in the current debate. Unfortunately, that this, especially around gas, fracking, shale gas, it's seen as a kind of transition fuel or transition solution and towards maybe using renewable energy. But we say actually it's really not the case. And the report shows clearly that the impacts are so threatening potentially around the world, and that we can't see this really as a transition fuel or as a solution at all. And it's the same, like we can't rely on shale gas, we can't rely on CCS, carbon capture storage, we can't rely on geoengineering. But instead, I think what we should really see is the clear commitments to invest in renewables, but not just in renewables, but really look into renewables which are controlled by people and owned by people, so community energy solutions, and that we look into also the access to energy, that everybody has access to energy and not just the developed countries and maybe the rich elites in other countries.
You were saying before, Susie, that those are the solutions presented by Friends of the Earth Europe, by other social movements, organizations. Europe has a very nice experience working on these kind of energy solutions, controlled by communities, decentralized. What can you tell us about that? How can you explain to us a bit more about how it works, in which ways can energy be managed by peoples and for everybody and with sovereignty over the resources? How do you see that?
It's very interesting to see in countries like Germany, Denmark, or maybe in part of the UK and Scotland, that community energy projects pop up kind of every day, and you see really inspiring projects, wind projects, solar projects, where people really initiate and set up those projects, own the energy and control the energy, and kind of leave in that way or have great benefits in their own local area and for their own economy. And we see that these solutions are really large scale, but currently still there's a political will missing, and so that we don't see it in a large scale. But those examples in European countries, I think we want to see them in other European countries as well, specifically maybe more in Central and Eastern European countries where we don't see it that much yet. But I think this gives great, or it shows a great example that the solutions are there, and also beyond Europe. I think we see fantastic community energy projects in the Philippines. We see great projects also in Latin America, but we have to really invest and make them happen. And it's not only renewable energy. For example, in many areas or in Eastern Europe, it can be specifically focused on energy efficiency projects, because there's I think a big potential in saving energy through energy efficiency projects, and that could also be really controlled by communities and citizens. And we would like to see that around the world. And maybe if we go beyond those projects, we would also like to see more people solutions on food, on our food system. So it's not only energy, but I think we urgently need to look also into our food system and kind of create the solutions which are there, but in a larger scale.
So I guess, Susie, that as Friends of the Earth Europe, you are calling here governments for more of this political will that you are saying that it's not enough until now.
Yes, exactly. So we call really on that we need a greater political will, and specifically at the EU, we currently see with the agreed new climate and energy package for 2030, we see a lack of political will with very weak targets on emission reductions, on renewables and energy efficiency. And as Friends of the Earth Europe, we call really on the governments that we need, in this urgent situation of climate change, that we need a greater political will.
Real World Radio, broadcasting free words, building popular communications by FOI.